By way of introduction, we know that a short tam pays chatzi nezek. And this is based on the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, v'chatzu es hashor achai. It means that both the mazik and the nizak participate in this loss, in the compensation. Again, the nizak doesn't pay out of pocket, obviously. He suffered a loss. But nevertheless, he's going to suffer half of that loss. And the mazik is going to pay him only half. So the mazik only pays half, and the nizak pays half. That's we get two halves make a whole, right? So basically, it's a participation on the part of the nizak and the mazik. It seems to me, I can't prove this to you, that the Torah sees liability and compensation as a reflection of negligence. And in this case of Shor Tam, we're in a very ambiguous state as far as negligence is concerned. The Shor acted belligerently, what's called in the Gemara's language, Kavanasa Lahazik. That's not something that we anticipate. You know, an animal, by its very nature, is generally speaking friendly and docile until you provoke it. And that means that if liability is a reflection of what the Mishnah says at the beginning of Bava Kama, Shmirasan Alecha, and you were negligent in protecting, in guarding, and supervising a potentially hazardous, damaging animal, let's say in the case of a shor, then you have to pay damages. Clearly, in the case of a shor amuad, and the animal has established itself to be a belligerent animal, your negligence and your chiv shmira reflects the fact that we anticipate and we can predict that the animal is going to be belligerent. That's the nature of the animal. If on the other hand, it's a short time, we don't anticipate that the animal will be belligerent, and therefore your chiv shmira and your element of negligence is reflected thereof. On the other hand, there's always an obligation on the part of the nizak, the one who is damaged, to protect himself against damaging. The most profound example of that is what's called Shein V'Regel Rishus HaRabim, that if I'm taking my animal through Rishus HaRabim, a public domain, and animals tend to eat, if you're carrying your fruits and your vegetables in Rishus HaRabim, you have to protect your possessions. You know that there are all sorts of animals roaming through the public domain, and you have to take precautions. So the Chiv Shmira, as a general rule, is shared by both the Mazik and the Nizak until we know otherwise. Which means that, let's say, if I take my animal into your private Rishus, into your private chatzer, then in that case, you, as the owner of that chatzer, are not obligated to any extent in Shmira. You know, you have no reason to anticipate that Yenim's shor went into your backyard. And if he took it into your backyard, then the full responsibility of Shmira, of protecting against Nezek, falls on the shoulders of the Mazik, and therefore the Mazik pays Nezek Sholem. In the case of a Shor Tam, where we can't expect the Mazik to give and provide full Shmira, because he doesn't predict, he doesn't anticipate that the animal will be belligerent, therefore the ultimate chiyuv on the nizak to protect himself and guard his possessions adds an element of contribution to the hezek. In any event, the Mishnah at the beginning of the fourth perek, which is here on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, addresses a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon in a case of a shor tam that damaged a number of different animals. That's called Shor Shenogach Arba V'Chamisha Shvarim Zeh Acher Zeh. Now the first question that we want to ask is, how can the Mishnah speak about Arba V'Chamisha Shvarim and at the same time talk about a Shor Tam? A Shor Tam is only up to the third Nezek. After the third Nezek, it pays Nezek Shalom. There seems to be a machlokes between Abai v'Rava whether or not the shor could pay Nezek Shalim on the third time, the third negicha, because that third negicha makes it into a shor muad, and therefore simultaneously with it becoming a shor muad, it should pay nezek shalem. But the maskana is that even according to Rava, the shor hamuad pays only on the fourth negich. Now here we're talking about at least four negichas, possibly even five negichas, the Mishnah offers, and therefore we must be talking about a shor muad. So how could the Mishnah call it a shor tam? So the one to first address this problem is Rashi, really the first Rashi in the Perek, and the Chidushei HaRashba. I find the Chidushei HaRashba a little bit more fascinating, more challenging, but yet closer to simple pshat. Again, I'm not trying to prejudice you, but in this case I happen to be on the Rashba side. The Rashba says that there's halacha which is derived from the pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim of Vehuad Biba'olav that requires ha'oda bifnei bal hashar hamazik, which means that in order to create a shar muad, the transition between tam and muad requires that there were three different what we call hagadas edios, three different testimonies. It could have been the same pair of edim or three different pairs of edim. That's irrelevant. But in each case, the Edim testified in the presence of the Baal HaShor. That's called Vehuad Bibolov. So the Rashba says that we may have situations of a Shor that was Mazik multiple times, and yet its status is still remains that of a Shor Tam. And the reason for that is we were missing the condition called Vehuad Bibolov. And the testimony in front of Bezdin was given Shalom bifnei habaylim. Now, the reason for that is, and that's also an issue which I'm not going to get into now, called huad hashar, meaning there are two dinim in ha'odah. You know, when the edim come to testify, they're really relevant in two different dimensions. One is to relevant to support the claim of the Nizak that this animal damaged, and therefore the Nizak has a right to claim compensation for damages. And then it's called Huad Balav, that the owner of the Shar now becomes, so to speak, a Muad, such that now he has to pay Nezek Sholem. So that even if we're dealing with the Shar Tam, who only pays Chatzi Nezek, there is a great significance of the testimony, even Shalom Ifnei Bailov, to establish a Chiv Tashlumin. As far as the process of Ha'oda is concerned, meaning to make the transition between a Shor Tam and a Shor Muad, the Eidus is meaningless, Shalom Ifnei Bailov. But as far as the Iker Chiv of Tashlumin Ezekiel, which means to pay Chatzi Nezer, we don't need Ifnei Bailov. So that if, let's say, for example, the owner of the shor is out in, I don't know, what example can I give? There's no place too far away today, right? If I'd say Alaska, I mean, Mitch Wolf is one of our participants, he's out there, so that wouldn't be a good example. But, I don't know, Yakutsk, or I don't know where it is, somewhere out there in Noahsville. So we can't find the violin. In the meantime, we have two Edim, and Bezdin wants to evoke their testimony, Shalom b'fnei Bailin, that testimony would be relevant to establish Tashlumi Nezikin. Again, it's not going to effectuate a transfer of status vis-a-vis the Shor. For that, we need Vahuad Bibolov, that the Bailim have to become a Muad. When I mean Muad, it means that they consistently failed to watch the Shor the way they were supposed to be, even after they were given multiple warnings to do so. It could also be a case where two Edom testify on three different negichos simultaneously, and in that case the shor becomes chayiv in tashlumin, but the bialim don't become ha'ad according muadim to pay nezek shalom according to one daya, because they didn't violate three asros. There was no possibility. So three asros would only be possible if the Edom came in to testify about one negicha on Sunday, and then Edom came in on Monday, and then a third pair of Edom came in on Tuesday. And the Bailam, after each testimony, failed to watch and provide the proper Shmira on the Shor. So that's the way the Rashba goes. Rashi has a different mahal. Rashi says, Shor Shenogach Arba V'Chamisha U'Bekulam Hayatam. In all three cases, the shor, all four cases, all five cases, the shor remains a shor tam. Now let's skip the next two words for a minute. Mishtalim begufo, vehechi dami. How could it be? Asks Rashi, that the shor gored on multiple occasions, and yet it remains a shor tam. Kigon ra shor v'nogach, the ra shor v'lo nogach, the ra shor v'nogach. So in the middle case, the shor encountered another ox and it failed to gore. That's called what? Anybody know what that's called? Starts with a ches and ends with a hay. Has a Zion Reish in the middle. That's called chazara. Okay. Chazara means what we would call tshuva. You know, the shor did tshuva, so to speak. You see, because every time the shor gores, we don't know really if that's an indication of the nature of the shor, or maybe the sun was beating down heavily that day on the back of the shor, or something provoked the shor. The shor woke up on the left side of the bed, so to speak, in a bad mood, and that's why the shor was no geach. So the halacha requires a repeat performance in order to establish the shor as a shor, as a shor mu'ud. And that repeat performance of one negicha, second negicha, and a third negicha has to link up together in what's called a tziruf. You know, just like we discussed in Chulin, if you eat a chatzi zayis and then another chatzi zayis, if it was all kedei achilas pras, that's mitzarif the first achilah, the second achilah. In the case of negichos, to establish a shor as a mu'ud, we need tziruf. What breaks up that tziruf? That's called chazara. The moment that the animal saw another shor, and despite that confrontation, it refused to act belligerently, but rather exhibited a docile behavior, which is called in Hebrew shafel, shin pei lamed. Shin pei lamed means, you know, I'm not messing around with you, you're okay and I'm okay, we'll keep that distance. That constitutes a chazara, which neutralizes the previous negicha. Because the previous negicha now, with its subsequent negicha, is separate, is wedged by a chazara in the middle. So Rashi wants to suggest that the simplest way of explaining how the shor would have been guilty of multiple negichos and still retain its status as a shor tam is if there was chazara, if there was a breakage of the tziruf between negicha A and negicha B. And then, for example, achar negicha shnia, Rashi says, after the second negicha, rosh tepamim ogimel shor v'lo nogach. Right? So again, Rashi says, there was another chazara. So even if, let's say, after the first negicha, there were two consecutive negichas, but between, let's say, the third negicha and the fourth negicha, there was a chazara. And the reason why Rashi wants to set it up in such a way is because he wants to avoid something that's called mu'ad l'seirugin. Mu'ad l'seirugin means that sometimes you can establish the propensity of the animal, meaning the behavior pattern of the animal, through a certain continuous pattern. And then that becomes more complicated. Like, for example, the next mission is going to discuss what happens if this animal gets belligerent against other shvarim, but not on the against gemolim. That's called mu'ad l'mino, ain't a mu'ad l'sheino mino. Well, let's say, for example, the shor is nogeach on every Rosh Chodesh. You would be shocked to know that has tremendous halachic significance. If the shor is nogeach every 14 days, and this is reminiscent of Hilchus Nida, where in Hilchus Nida we have a case of haflogas vestos. If a woman sees a Nida, sees Nidus in a very definite pattern, so that too can create a hafloga, which she has to be very careful, anticipating that she'll have a Re'ias Dam Nida on according to that pattern. And the halach of Shor Mu'ad, I'm not sure if you realize this, and even if you do, it's always kedai to do a chazoron. The halacha of mu'adus, of ha'adah, meaning to establish a Shavuot, is a paradigm of chazaka. And I'll give you an example. The classical case of chazaka is a perek in Shas called Cheskas Habatim, the third perek above Basra. And if you look in Cheskas Habatim, you'll see that the Gemara assumes that if a person lives in a house or works a field for 3 years, that establishes a chazaka that it's his, even if he, according to his claim, he lost his document of purchase. So he doesn't have a shtar mecher, which in Karkos, in order to establish ownership on the normal circumstances, you need a shtar mecher. The substitute for shtar mecher, if the shtar got lost, at least according to the claim of the matzik, is chazaka. And the Gemara wants to know, how do you establish the laws of chazaka? And the Gemara says, we derive it from shara mu'ot. That's the first sugya. That's the famous sugi called Hol Cheyusha, if you've ever heard of it, at the beginning of Chesk Sabbatim. I'm just curious, how many people here learned Chesk Sabbatim? Two, only two. All right. For those who didn't learn Chesk Sabbatim, get used to the Rashbam instead of Rashi. That's the real challenge, because we are so spoiled by Rashi. In any event, the Rashbam over there at the beginning of Chesk Sabbatim explains that, let's say you have a person who lives on in a house or works a field with Serugin, meaning, let's say he lives there on the first year, the third year, and the fifth year. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth whether or not that constitutes a chazaka. Does the fact that on the second or the fourth year he leaves the field, does that break up his chazaka? And the Gemara actually wants to derive that from Shara Mu'ad. And just like Shara Mu'ad, there's Halach of L'Seirigin, right, if there was no Chazara, and the Shara, let's say, is no Gaf on the 1st of the month, the 14th of the month, the 28th of the month, and so forth, so on, every 14 days, that could create a Chazaka. So too, in Cheskas Habatim, it might create a Chazaka. The Gemara at the end denies that, for a different reason, because what happens is that what's called the Marakama, the original owner, comes back to his field, and he shows up on the second year. And lo and behold, there's nothing going on over there. So he doesn't realize that the previous year, somebody was squatting on his karka, anticipating his establishment of a chazaka. The marakama, the bailim, doesn't know. And at the end of the day, the Gemara establishes that Chesk Sabbatim is a result of what we call shtikas marakama, the fact that he didn't make a mecha. And therefore, if the machzik was machzik b'seirigin, and skipping a year here and skipping a year there, it's not like the case of Shara Mu'ad L'Seirigin, because if the Marakama claims, and we have every reason to believe him, that he came and he saw that no one was living on his field, and that's why he didn't make a Mecha, so that justifies his Shtika. Now we go on in the Mishnah to understand how to set up the collection here of the Nizakim. So let's say, for example, Reuven's shor was mazik Shimon, and then the shor was mazik Levi, and then the shor was mazik Yehuda, and we can keep going and going, and we have now all these different nizokim who are now claiming tashlume nizokim. Okay, so now we got to get back to the two words in Rashi that I skipped before. The Shar Tam says Rashi's Mishtalem Migufo. And this is another unique dimension of Shar Tam as opposed to a Shar Mu'ad. Shar Mu'ad is Gover Min Haliyah, which basically means that the compensation of the Bala Shar, the liability of the Bala Shar to pay, the Bala Mazik to pay Nizakin, is irrelevant to the Shar itself, the Shar Mazik I'm talking about. It's totally relevant to the Shar Nizak. So if my Shar is a Shar Mu'ad and it damages a Shar Nizak, then I simply have to pay damages. It's the same as Shein Veregel. If my animal destroyed your tomatoes, we value the tomatoes and I pay for the tomatoes. if it's a bar and your animal falls into my bar, I pay you for the damage to the animal. And the same thing applies to Sharm Mu'ud. Basically, in Sharm Mu'ud, I would say the following. The owner of the Sharm Mu'ud writes a check. That's it. Period. That's called, in the language of Chazal, Damin. Dalid Mem Yud Mem. Not this, not blood. Again, we're not learning Chulin now for the Summer's month. I still reserve the right to return to Chulin. But he pays Damin. Damin means, you know, he writes a check. He's got money in the bank, and that's what he has to pay. Again, I'm not going into the question of karka. Let's say he doesn't have cash, he has karka. Which karka does he give him? Does he give him the best karka or the worst karka? That's all different sugya. Meitav sadeh. That's Sharm Mu'ud. So Sharm Mu'ud is Mishalim min Aliyah. Min Aliyah, for our purposes, is a phrase that has nothing to do with the fact that Baruch Hashem, we made Aliyah. It has to do with paying from a checking account, simply signing a check. It's like if I borrow $1,000 from you and now I want to repay you for that loan, I write a check. It doesn't have to be a check, I can give you cash.
Is Ayin Lamed?
Ayin Lamed Yud Yud He. Min Ha'aliyah. Min means is Memdun. Min Ha'aliyah Mishalim. Okay? However, when we get to Shartam, we have a unique halacha. We've already seen that Shartam is unique in that it pays only chatzi nezek. But there's another unique halacha. And this halacha, surprisingly, works often, not always, in favor of the nizak. Let me explain. That's called migufo mishalim. How does that work in favor of the nizak? There's something called a shibut. If you don't mind writing that down, because that's going to be a key word for us. Shin, ayin, beis, vav, dalet. Shibud means first rights for collection. You see, if I owe you money, so if I have cash and you come to collect, that's fine. That's called b'nei chori. But if I don't have any money, because all my possessions were already sold and the cash assets are gone, then that's where shibud comes in. In English, it's called a lien, L-I-E-N. You have to spell that properly, so otherwise it's a piece of meat. Okay? L-I-E-N. So this shibud allows the Baal Chov to collect from lekuchos, from even those who purchased the property of the loave, the one who borrowed the money. In our case, the mazik is always considered the loave, because he owes the money. Now, in a certain sense, a normal shibud is very, how should I say, very iffy. It's not so reliable. I'll tell you why, because there may be millions of people that I owe money to. If I borrowed money multiple times and there's only one shibud, there's only one, let's say, piece of karka of real estate to collect from. So if I owe you 1,000 and you 1,000 and you 1,000 and the karka that I sold is worth 1,000, so the buyer, the purchaser, the lokeach, to whom does he forfeit this karka that's worth 1,000? And there are all sorts of dinim that will control that. And it's very possible that you'll be able to collect $1,000 worth of karka, but you won't be able to collect $1,000 worth of karka. So how do we really upgrade the shibud to the point in which the Baal Chov, we'll call him the Malva, or in our case the Nizak, is guaranteed collection? And that is called migufo kamishtalim. That's the unique halacha of Shartam. Shartam, the Torah gives, I say grants, because it's really a grant in a sense, grants the nizak special rights, which it doesn't grant to the nizak in the case of a Sharm Mu'ud. In the case of a Sharm Mu'ud, you know, the nizak's position is very vulnerable. Because will he be able to collect his compensation or not depends on so many different factors. In the case of a shartam, the Torah wanted to guarantee the nizak. It's almost like a quid pro quo. You know, on the one hand, the Torah is being very harsh on the nizak and forcing him to, as we said before, to participate in the loss. And he only collects chatzi nezek. On the other hand, the Torah sort of compensated him. It was a pius, I would call it, a compensation. And the Torah says, you know what? I'm going to guarantee that at least that chatzi nezik you'll be able to collect. How so? That's called migufo kamishtalim. Now this halacha migufo kamishtalim that grants the nizak rights to collect his chatzi nezik from the shor amazik, meaning the shor amazik now becomes meshuba to the nizak, so that if the mazik goes ahead and sells the shor, the nizak will nevertheless be able to collect his chatzi nezek from the lokeach. Now you might ask, well, we're being very compassionate to the nizak, but we're being very harsh to the lokeach. I mean, he paid good money for the shor. So the answer is, and this might sound strange to you, the word is out about this shor. You know, if you've ever seen cows, you know, what they do is they attach something to the ear of the cow, you know what I'm saying? And it has like a number to it or something. If you haven't been to Switzerland, you know, you've seen those beautiful cows there, you know, grazing on the mountainside. And then you come close to the cow and you notice it's got a number on it. Right? It's an Eved Nirtza. And every shor shehizik, even a shor tam, has a nirtza to it. It has like a sign on it. It's public knowledge that this shor is a shor hamazik. It's what's called a nagchan. And therefore, when the lokeach purchases this shor, we have no compassion for him, because he realizes that there's a shivut attached to this shor. And that's true, by the way, whenever you buy a piece of real estate. You can check and decide whether to buy it based on the knowledge. Your investigation will tell you whether there's a shiva, there's a lien on this karka. If you go ahead and buy a piece of karka from a lover, you have to realize full well your vulnerability vis-a-vis this karka, because the malva might in turn show up one day and kick you out of the karka because he's collecting his chov from the lover, and the lover doesn't have any b'nei chori, so he collects from the shubadi. Here too, the nizak is like a malva, but he in a sense is superior to a malva. He's superior to a malva because a malva's ability to collect from a shubadim and the lova is limited to karka, to real estate. It does not extend to include metaltel and movable objects. But in the case of the nizak, in a shar tam situation, even though the shar tam was sold to a lokeach, nevertheless, the nizak has the wherewithal to collect his chov, if need be, from the lokeach, force him to cough up the shor hamazik because of the halach of shibud. And even though it's metaltalin, and it's no shibud of metaltalin, nevertheless he can collect it. Fine. Now, everything that I told you until now is correct according to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael's shita is yusham hashor, which means that the mazik is basically a lover. In other words, his status vis-a-vis the nizak is that of a bal chov. It's as if he borrowed money. He owes a chov, and that has to be paid in cash. And if the mazik can't pay in cash, then we go down to shibudin, and then the nizak will collect his chov from the gufo shel shor, and that's called shor tam. That's called shibud. However, Rabbi Akiva disagrees, and this is one of the main subjects of the last perek, perek HaMeniach. And Rabbi Akiva says yuchlat hashor. What does yuchlat hashor mean? It's a fascinating halach. What Rabbi Akiva understood in the pasuk v'chatzu es hashor chai is that the shor itself is owned by the nizak. Now, what does that mean? The shor is owned by the nizak. So let's give a very extreme case where Rabbi Akiva really goes, you know, around the bases, as we'd say, and comes into home plate with a home run. Here's a case where, let's say, the nezek was 400, which means that the mazik has to pay how much, Rabosai? In a case of a tam, 200. The shor hamazik is worth 200. Who owns the shor, according to Rabbi Akiva?
The nizak.
The nizak owns the shor. That's called yuchlat hashor. And that was a very extreme case. In most cases, your average case, the nizak becomes what we call a shutaf, a partner in the shor. Let's say, for example, the compensation that the mazik has to pay is 100, and the shor itself is worth 200. The mazik owns 100. Were a hundred's worth of the shor. The nizak owns a hundred's worth of the shor, and they are partners in the shor. Now, there's something really interesting that happens here. On the one hand, Rabbi Akiva is rooting for the nizak, meaning that the nizak, he doesn't even have to bother going through this process of collection of his chov. If he so desires, he could just take away the shor, or at least own half the shor. And it's automatic. Okay, I'll write down the word automatic because I want to come back to that word in just a minute. That's going to be a machlokas between the Ktzos and the Chazanish, what exactly that word automatic means. But on the other hand, the flip side, in a funny sort of way, I call it the paradox of Rabbi Akiva, Yuchlat Hashar is a chumra against, that works against the Nizam. Because what happens at the moment that we activate the principle of Yuchal Hashar and establish the partnership of the Nizak in the Shar?
He takes responsibility.
Correct. He's now Chayv in Shmiras Hashar. So it's very interesting here. The first Hezek of Reuven Shar was against Shimon. Correct? Now that Shar is Mazik Levi. And then it's Mazik Yehuda, etc., etc. What happens now is that although initially when this shor of Reuven was mazik Shimon, Reuven takes full responsibility for that nezek and he pays chatzi nezek in the case of a shor tam, when this shor now is mazik Levi, now Shimon takes responsibility. Now, does he take full responsibility? Well, that all depends upon the value of the shor. But let's assume that in the paradigm case that I gave you before, Shimon takes over the entire shor. So then according to Rabbi Akiva, in such a case, Shimon becomes the exclusive owner of the shor hamazik, and therefore he becomes exclusively the Baal HaMazik, meaning that when the nezek happens now between Shimon and Levi, Levi's claim is going to be addressed to whom? Not to Reuven, the owner of the shor, but to Shimon, who now became the owner of the shor. So fascinating, because according to Rabbi Akiva, the mechanics is that the nizak now becomes the mazik. It's a sort of switch of personality. Why does the nizak become the mazik? Because he owns the shor.
Shor had to be transferred to his or shor.
Oh, so that's the question of automatically that I asked you to underline that word automatically. The Ktzos assumes that the automatic Yuchlat HaShor depends upon what's called Ha'amada B'din. Yuchlat HaShor is not something that magically happens in which, you know, Reuven Shor gores Shimon Shor and Shimon now owns the Shor. That's magic in halachic terms, because every kinyan requires a maisa kinyan, and the chalosa kinyan is resulted from a maisa kinyan. So far, all I saw that happened b'shetach was that Reuven Shor attacked Shimon Shor. I didn't see that Shimon picked up the Shor and said, you know, he made a kinyan adba, he made a kinyan meshicha. You know, in the case of an elephant, he told the elephant to stand on four little benches that are three tefachim high. I mean, we didn't see any of that happen. So the Ktzos, therefore, is of the opinion that the power of effectuating Yuchlat HaShor, of granting a partnership, an ownership of the Nizak in the Shor Mazik, is the power of Bezdin. And that's called Hamoda Bedin. Bezdin, when they get this case in front of them, and they hand down a verdict to the effect that this Hezek happened, and therefore the mazik has to pay the nizak has claim to damages against the mazik, at that point, and at that point only, says the Ktzos, does the nizak become the owner of the shor. And that's called Yuchlat HaShor according to Rabbi Akiva. The Chazon Ish is of the opinion that we work with the principle of L'mafreya. And this is fascinating. The Chazon Ish says that to some extent, again, it's very complicated, it's not 100%, but to some extent, once Beis Din paskins the Chiyuv, meaning that the Mazik has to compensate the Nizak, at that moment, retroactively, the Nizak becomes the owner of the Shor from the moment of the Maisa Negicha. Again, I have to add a little histaiguri, you know, a little bit of hesitation, because a little bit of reservation here. It's not a total mafreya, because there are different dimensions of ownership. But the most fundamental ownership we know of is called the ownership in the guf hashar or guf hachefta. There are other parts of ownership, like, for example, the shvach, and there's the tashmishim, and there's shavius. I mean, there are many different dimensions to ownership. But the most fundamental and basic dimension of ownership is to own the guf, you know, the physical substance, you know, the molecular structure, so to speak. And that, according to the Chazon Ish, is owned, according to Rabbi Akiva, l'mafreya, from the moment of the negicha. And again, we're going to have to figure out how that works, you know, magically, you know, Beis Din paskins and Tamar Bedin, and then l'mafreya from the time of the Maisa Negicha, then the Nizak owns the Shor. But that's how it works.
Responsibility on him, which he obviously...
No, not responsibility, but ownership. Mind you, David, the nafkamina is going to be, if the mazik decides between T1 and T2, meaning between the time of the negicha that took place at T1 and the time of Hamada Bidin, when Beis Din handed down the verdict T2, in the window between T1 and T2, the mazik went ahead and sold this animal. Is that sale valuable? Is it valid? And it all depends who owns the shor. I can't sell your shor. If the shor now belongs to the Nizak, according to the Chazon Ish in Rabbi Akiva, then the Yuchad HaShor at the end of the day begins immediately with the Maisa Negicha, again, only the Mafreya, right? Then any transfer of ownership on the part of the Mazik over the shor is completely meaningless. He's selling, or he's being magdish, something that doesn't belong to him. Okay, fine. Now, David, you mentioned responsibility of the shor. So let's shift back now to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael is of the opinion that all the Nizak has in this shor is a shibud, as we discussed the great length. And the question is a shibud enough to trigger off some sort of responsibility? So that if the shor, in the aftermath of its negicha against Shimon's shor, right? Gotta get the names right. Against Shimon's shor. Now, Shimon owns a shibud in that shor. Is that enough to engender responsibility vis-a-vis Levi when this shor now is no get Levi in the third negicha? And the answer is no. Because according to Rabbi Shmuel, the maximum that you can give of ownership, so to speak, in the shor for the Nizak is only shibudim. Shibudim is a very kind of conditional ownership that may or may not come to fruition, but certainly at this point, it doesn't give him ownership in what's called the guf shor hamazik. And therefore, the principle at the beginning of Bava Kamma, which is called shmiras on alecha, could not kick in, doesn't apply. We can no way, no how attribute responsibility to Shimon to guard the shor and supervise the shor simply because he has shibudim in the shor. The shibud rights that he has through the halacha of mishali begufo, that only operates in an event that when the nizak comes to collect from the mazik, the only thing he can collect from is this shor. That's the last piece of property or value that he possessed. So then he hops over to the lokeach and forces the lokeach to cough it up by virtue of the shibud that the Torah gave him in the shor. But obviously the shor is completely, totally in the ownership of the mazik. If the mazik goes ahead and sells the shor, the sale is valid, according to Rabbi Shmuel. So here we have a new halacha, and that's called tfisa, if you want to write it down. Again, I'm sorry that we're, you know, for those who are not so oriented, you know, I'm hitting you with the kitchen sink here, but we'll be okay. I promise you we'll be okay. If the experiment works, you know. What's tfisa? Tfisa means that if you owe me money, according to strict halacha, I have to go to Bezdin. I have to. What word am I looking for in English? I have to avail myself. Oh, no, what's the word I'm looking for? Anyway,
sue.
I have to sue you in a court of law. But there's a word I'm looking for. But I can't take the law into my own hands. You know, when I was a kid, there was a cigarette company called Viceroy. I'm really dating myself. So on the back of the package, there was a coupon. You remember? Even if you didn't smoke, I mean, you had to know about this. So if you collected the coupons, then they gave you gifts, you know, and you see somebody sitting in his living room, and all of a sudden his lamp disappears because so and so had so many coupons through Viceroy, and he collected this lamp, you know. But so anyway, that's not a good mushel. But if the malva comes to the lokach, he can't just walk into lokach's rishus, or for that matter, into the lova's rishus, and just steal his lamp, you know, and say, "Well, I'm collecting." But there is such a thing called tfisa. And tfisa is halachically valid because since there was money coming to him and he collected that money, or shavei kesef, he collected something of value, we can't remove him from that as long as he and Bezin can prove that he had that claim. And this really bridges the gap between shibud and bailus, between having a shibud and having ownership. What bridges it? Tfisa. When the Nizak, who has a shibud in the shor of the mazik, implements that shibud in a very radical way, in a very aggressive way, through tfisa, and he actually grabs onto the shor, at that point, he now becomes the owner of the shor. Now, I'm not sure if what I just told you is accurate, precise, and meticulous, but one thing I can tell you, he owns the shor as far as Nezikin is concerned. Why is that? Because Shmirasan Alecha doesn't require full-fledged ownership. How can I prove to you that liability does not require full-fledged ownership? What's the clearest proof for that? Bar Rish HaSarabin. Right? A man digs a ditch in the middle of Rish HaSarabin. Again, I'm not getting into all the different shittas about that. But suffice it to say that according to Rov Ruban Shel Amoraim and Rishonim and Poskim, he is chayav if somebody's shor falls into that bar. Why? We have a concept called Mamad HaMazik. Shmirasan Alecha. It's your shor, guard the shor, but it's not my bar. So the answer is that there's such a thing called Rishus HaMazik. What does Rishus mean? Rishus means that even without ownership, I can be responsible for this mazik. Eish, for example, is very questionable whether you could own an eish. Eish is just a gas. It's a dovish einbo mamish. I don't know if you could claim ownership over an eish. And nevertheless, your chayfin is ke'eish. And according to Reish Lakish, that's called mishum mamono. It's your mom. What do you mean it's your mom? What did Reish Lakish have in mind when he said that I own Eish the same way I own my shor, and if I'm chayav, I'm liable for damages? That's ridiculous. How can you own an Eish? Can I steal your Eish? I can steal your shor. Can't steal your Eish. But the answer is that what Reish Lakish had in mind when he said that Eish is mishum mamono is that it's virshusi. I was the one who created this fire, and therefore I'm called the Baal HaEsh, Baal HaBor. I created the bar, I'm the Baal HaBor. The Baal HaBor is in Dinei Mamonos. This is the famous principle, if you've ever heard it, Rab Lozer. Omar Rab Lozer, Shnei Dvarim Eina Bershusa Shalona, Vasan HaKosav Ke'ilu Hein Bershusa. We're only interested in half of that. Bar Bershus HaRab, the other half when we learn Psochem, Yerus Hashem, Velineda. Then we'll talk about the Chometz, the passage. So Bar Bershus HaRab, Masan HaKosav Ke'ilu Hein Bershusa. What does that mean? It's a quasi-bailus. It's not the bailus of classic Choshen Mishpat, in which I own the Guf HaDavar. I can't own this bar in Bershus HaRab. No way, no how. I can't sell it. I can't be Magdish it. I have no rights of bailus. But I'm a bailim in Hilchus Nezik. And that, my friends, is the Yisod HaYisodis of the sixth Perek of Bava Kamma, which is called Perek HaKonis. And I was vacillating back and forth whether we should study the fourth Perek or the sixth Perek. So if this experiment doesn't work, don't throw in the towel, because I may come in next week and say we're learning HaKonis. Because that's a fascinating Perek. And that whole Perek is based on the concept of a Mazik Bershuso Shel Adam, who's chayav in the zikin even though he's not the owner of the object. And the classical example is bar or eish, and the second classical example is called dalid shomer. So for example, if you give me an ox as a shomer, I'm the custodian over that ox, I have to watch to make sure that nobody attacks that ox, then dragged along, right, as a result of my chiv shmiras hashar, so that the shar shouldn't be damaged, I automatically pick up a second chiv, and that's called shmiras nezikin, which means that I become liable for the nezikin. A similar concept we have here in Rabbi Yishmael, that if the nizak grabs onto this shar to exercise his collection rights under the law of tfisa, then even if he's not strictly the owner of the shor, the guf hashor may still belong to whom? To the mazik. Nevertheless, the nizak becomes reshus hashor. The nafkamina being that he's not now chayev for nizikin. So again, just to summarize, we have two different, I call it modus operandi over here, two different mechanical systems to explain why Levi, excuse me, yeah, okay, I can say that, why Levi could sue Shimon. Sounds very strange. Why is Levi suing Shimon when Shimon is never the nizah? You know, he's down and out. His shor was just totaled by the shor of Reuven. Now the shor of Reuven attacks Levi, and Levi comes knocking on the door of Shimon. And there are two answers to that question. One answer is Rabbi Akiva's answer, and the other is Rabbi Shmuel's answer. Rabbi Akiva's answer is Yuchlad Hashor. But again, that's going to depend on the Ketzos and the Chazon Ish, because at what point are we saying Yuchlad Hashor? So that becomes very iffy. But let's say we go with the Chazon Ish that L'mafreya, Yuchlad Hashor is activated from the moment of the Negicha, which means that the Nizek has ownership rights in the Guf Hashor from the moment of the Negicha. So at this point, Shimon slips into the shoes of Reuven, as far as Nezikin is concerned, simply because he owns the shor. And when I say he owns the shor, I mean that literally he owns the shor. I don't have to come on to this whole chiddush of Rishus and Bailus and Nezikin. He is the monetary ownership according to the laws of Choshen Mishpat on the shor. The other modus vivendi here is to go with Rabbi Shmuel. That Enochinami, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Nizak doesn't own a thing in the shor. That's called Yusham Hashor. But he has a shibud. And that shibud gives him rights of gvia. Gvia means to collection. Collection rights. And between shibud and gvia, there's a bridge called tfisa. And the very moment that Shimon was toe-faced this shor, he literally grabbed hold of it, because again, he wanted to guarantee his collection, and that's what the Torah had favor here in the case of Shor Tam, had compassion on the Nizak to allow him to grab onto the shor and hold on to it. Again, according to Rabbi Akiva, he doesn't even have to grab onto the shor. It's the Yuchlad Hashor. According to Rabbi Shmuel, he's got to grab onto the shor. At that moment that he grabs onto the shor, exercising the rights of Mishtalim Begufo, he becomes responsible for the Nizakin of the shor, and Levi, paradoxically, is going to sue not Reuven, the original owner of the shor, but rather Shimon, who was toe-faced the shor, and has a status similar to, let's say, a shomer, who's obligated in Nizakin because he's got the possession of the mazik. So let's read the Mishnah now. Shor shenogach arba v'chamisha shvarim, zeh ar zeh. So again, the shor remains a shor tam, we saw the Rashba, we saw Rashi, and now there are a number of people who are damaged by this single shor, and they all come, you know, running into Beis Din, and they want to get paid and compensated for their loss. But again, keep in mind that in the case of Chatzi Nezek, the compensation for the loss is through the shor, that's called Migufo Mishalim. And even though we've pointed out that that is a compassion that the Torah extended to the Nizak as a pacification for the fact that he only collects Chatzi Nezek, but it's also very harsh on the Nizak, because at the end of the day, the maximum value that the Nizak could collect from the shor, from the Baal HaShor, the Mazik, is the value of the shor. So there are tvei dinim in migufo kamishtalim. On the one hand, migufo kamishtalim raises, upgrades the rights of the nizak to what? To shibudim in the shor. And I'm going according to Rabbi Shmuel. And on the other hand, in the almost in the opposite movement, it limits the ability of the nizak to collect to a ceiling point, and that ceiling is the value of the shor mazik. So you see over and over again how mishtalim migufo really focuses or concentrates all the rights of the nizak to this shor. On the one hand, it upgrades him because it allows him to take the shor. To some extent, he can block the sale of the shor to the lokeah because he confiscates the shor from the lokeah. But at the same time, it severely limits the nizak and his rights to collect damages because his rights are circumscribed by the ceiling value of the shor hamas. Now, if I would ask you intuitively, amongst these fellows, all these lovely chaps who are coming into Beis Din, that's Shimon, the first Nizak, Levi, the second Nizak, Yehuda, the third Nizak, all these guys coming to Beis Din, to who would you expect, you know, give me your knee-jerk response, to give preference, for we're all limited to the value of the shor. Who should have first collection rights?
Shimon,
right? Mm-hmm. Comes along Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah, and he just completely bamboozles us. And he shocks us. And he says, Yeshalim li achron shebohem. Yehuda is going to be the one to collect from this shor. In Yeshbo Mosar, if after Yehuda collects his chatzinezik from the shor still has great value. Okay, we'll give a scenario in dollars and cents in a minute. Then, Yachzir lishelefanav. Now, Levi has rights to collect from what's left in the shor, and in Yeshbo Mosar, if there's still something left in the shor after both Yehuda and Levi have squeezed out from the shor whatever they could, there's still a little bit of juice left in the lemon. So then Yachzir le shelefnei funav, it means now we go back to Shimon. So Yehuda gets first rights, anything left now Levi gets rights, if anything's left after both scavengers, both Yehuda and Levi have collected, now we'll let Shimon collect, and therefore ha'achron, achron, miskar. Divrei Rabbi Meir. The last one, miskar, he's the one who gains here, because again, he's the one who has first rights to collect full chatzi nesek, 100% or 50%. And only then, if there's something left in the shor, after Yehuda collected his full chatzines, right, his full nezikin, only then does the one lefanov, which is in this case, we'll call him Levi, does he get rights to collect. If after Yehuda collects from this shor, there's nothing left in the shor, let's say, for example, the shor, you know what, Kahati in his Mishnais has a good case. Let's just follow his, because I have a tendency of changing the variables over and over again. That's I get mixed up. And then last night I gave a shiur in Ksubas and I spoke about a case where the war started on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, because I was thinking, you know, yesterday was Rosh Chodesh Tammuz when I gave the shiur. And then in the middle I started giving an example of Yud Zayin v'Tammuz, and everyone in the shiur was totally confused. So I think I'll have a better chance of succeeding if I use the example here. He says the following. Shoro Shel Ruven, if somebody could keep a scorecard, yeah, was worth Masayim Zuz, which was worth 200 Zuz. Okay? And now the Shor of Shimon was destroyed, and that Shor itself was worth Masayim Zuz. It means that Shimon took a loss of Masayim Zuz, and Ruven therefore has to reimburse him how much? 100 Zuz. Now, Tofso Shimon. Shimon grabs on to this shor, which is the shor of Reuven that's worth 200. He only has rights to collect 100, but his tfisa is meaningful as far as the 100 zuz, half the value of the shor. Chazar Hashor v'nogach es shoro shel Levi. Now the shor was nogach a third time to Levi. And again, he's Zikob and Masayim Zuz. Levi suffers a loss of 200 Zuz, in which case Levi has wherewithal to collect 100 Zuz. And now Tofso Levi. Levi grabs onto the Shar. Again, how does he get rid of Shimon? I don't know. But again, keep in mind, the Shar flew away from Shimon. Shimon did not do a good job in watching the Shar and holding on to it. You know, he tied it up with a very weak, that's the subject of Perek HaKoneis, a very weak kind of rope. And the Shah broke out of this weak rope, and sure enough, it was Mazel Levi. So Levi grabs onto the Shah. Everyone's getting trying to get a piece of the Shah. Again, if it was up to me, the last thing in the world that I would want is this Shah. It's got a little tag on it. I am an Akhan, you know. Now the Chazak v'Nogak Hashor Yehuda Zikah v'Masayim Zuz. Now Yehuda wants to collect from this Shah. Who does he collect from? He collects from Levi. Hare Levi Yishalim Yehuda, but again, he only pays Chatzi Nezek. So, what percentage of the Shar of the Shar Mazik, we'll call it, right? Does Yehuda collect 50%? Right, because his Nezek was 200, the Shars were 200. He collects 100. Shem Chatzi Nizko. Oh, now what happens is that Yehuda collects 100 from this shar, correct? What's left for Levi now? What's left for Levi is 100, correct? Shimon, there's nothing left for Shimon. So oddly enough, Shimon lost here through his Maisa Tvisa, because he now became chayiv to Levi. Levi grabbed onto it, and he's chayv to Yehuda. Yehuda collects 100, which he collects from this shar. Now, Levi could go back to Shimon and say, well, I have the remainder of the shar, in which case Shimon is left without anything in the shar. But the situation gets very, very complicated. Listen to this. The very moment that Levi grabbed onto the shar, and if you recall, Levi's tfis on the shar is only worth 100. Then Reuven, the original owner of the shar, has claim to 100 zuz. That claim is irreversible. There's no way that you could uproot Reuven from his ownership on the 100. So now, as we pass on this shar from Shimon to Levi and Levi to Yehuda, the maximum collectability value of the shor is only 100. And therefore, since Reuven collects his 100 from the shor, that's what he owns. Let's say we sell the shor, right, and we sell it for 200 zuz. Reuven collects 100 of those 200. Now, Yehuda collects the other 100, because Yehuda was damaged 200, which gives him rights to collect 50%, meaning 100. And now Levi is left out in the cold, and Shimon is left out in the cold. So basically what we're saying is that from this shar, we're going to split the value of the shar between Reuven and Yehuda. Do you have that? So let me read it to you inside. Reuven, dahainu bala shar, notel es hamana shalo, he gets 100. Yehuda collects his mana, which is half the nezek, from this shar. And the Mishnah says, Yishalim la'achron shebahem. It means that once we subtract Reuven's ownership of the shor from the value of the shor, what we're left with in the increment is 100. That 100 is designated now, first and foremost, for Yehuda. V'yeshvo mosar, let's assume that the chatzi nezek of Yehuda was not 100, because that's all that's left in the shor. But let's say he suffered a damage of 60, which means he collects 30. Now there's 70 left in the shar, and that 70 is Yachzor Milafonov. Now Levi could collect from that 70, and let's say Levi was, let's get this case now, Hoya Bomosko Chigam Chatzin Ezek Shal Levi Lohoya Ella Lohoya Meir Zuz. It wasn't a full 100 Zuz, but whether it was 40 Zuz, and now there's 70 left, Nishar Ol Shloshim Zuz. And that goes to Shimon for Chatzi Nezko. That's called Yatzar Lifnei Fun. The Akron Nizkar, right? So what happened over here? in this whole scenario, how much did Yehuda collect? If some, he collected 100. How much did Levi collect? Levi collected 70. And how much did Shimon collect? 30. So it went down. Did you see where it goes down? So that's called in the Lashon HaMishnah HaAchron Achron Niskar, right? Because Yehuda collected his Chatzi Nesek, which is the full amount that's coming to him, that's 100. Kol Metzas Nisko. Levi, who is next in line, can only get Chatzi Nesek from the Mosar, and then Shimon can collect only Chatzi Nesek from what's Mosar after that, so that's called Achron Achron Niskar.
I thought
maybe
it's 50.
What was the case? I forgot the numbers again. If somebody could just write this down and just spare me the numbers here.
Yehuda was the last one.
Yeah, let me read it again, Zev, if you don't mind. I'm sorry, I'm very bad at numbers. So this is what. So what? Now, after Yehuda collects 100, correct? That's Chatzi Nezek. And then what's left in the shor? 100
for the.
I'm sorry. if the Chatzi Nezek of Yehuda is 100, then there's nothing left neither for Levi nor Shimon because 100 goes to Reuven. Fine. What's the second scenario? Okay, Roman numeral number 2 if you're charting this out. Reuven gets 100 in any case. Here's the second case. The Nezek of Yehuda was 60, which means that Yehuda collects 30. Okay? Are you writing this down? Just so that we don't get confused. Now, Reuven now, I'm sorry. Yehuda collected 30. What's left for Levi? What's left for Levi is a maximum of 70. Okay? Now what happens is that Levi was damaged 40. Levi was damaged 40 zuz. So how much does he collect? 20. Okay, so what did Yehuda collect? He collected 30. And what did Levi collect? 20. How much is left now? 50. And now, Shimon. Just 1 second. I got the numbers wrong again. I'm so sorry. So there's 70 left for whom? For Levi, correct? Yehuda collected 30? Did I get that right?
Yes.
So we're left with 70. Now, what happens now? Now, Levi was damaged. Just 1 second. How much was Levi?
40.
Oh, I made a mistake. Levi was damaged 80. Okay, let me correct that. And therefore he collects 40. So what's left in the for Tashlumi Nezikin? Because again, Yehuda collected how much?
30.
And Levi collected
40 is left.
40. So what's left is 30, right? Because again, Reuven gets 100. Yachzu same for him. So now we're up to Shimon. Shimon could collect a maximum of what?
30.
Of 30, correct? Now, if the nezek that Shimon suffered was 100, he can't collect 50. He can only collect 30. Right. So that's called Achron Achron Niskar. Hainish Yehudu Nezek Achron Notel Kol Machtzis Nisko Vilu Levi Shahaya Nizak Shalafonov. Right, he's not the Achron, he's Lafonov. Eino Notel Esamosa Bilvad. And Yeshba Mosa Gede Tashim Chatzi Nisko Shal Levi. Fine, he gets the full Chatzi Nezek. But if he collects that, and what's left for Shimon is less than the full Chatzi Nezek, then Shimon is going to suffer the loss. Okay, that's according to whom?
The Mayor.
That's according to Rabbi Meir. And on that, the Gemara says, we're going to skip Rabbi Shimon for a minute, Masnisen, says the Gemara, Mani, who does it fit in with? Why? How do we square Rabbi Meir? Number one, Delo Kirabi Yishmael. Number two, the low Rabbi Akiva doesn't seem to work out according to anyone. Why? E Rabbi Yishmael di Amar Bale Chovos Ninhu, meaning whoever is chayef for Nezikin is chayef as a Balchov. is high achron achron niskar. It doesn't make any sense.
Rishon
rishon niskar mi boile. In Hilchas Gvias Chov, it's kol hakodem kodem l'gvia. Now, since the shibud to Shimon was the first shibud, again the Gemara doesn't know yet that Shimon grabbed the animal. That's going to be the final maskana. Therefore, Shimon has rights to collect first. And if we're limited to the value of the shor, then Shimon, who suffered a loss of 200, could collect his full 100 from the shor, and he's going to be niskar. The ikar of Yekiva diomar Torah deshutfehu, meaning that Yuchlad Ashor tells me that the nizak harishon, which is Shimon, becomes the owner of the shor. Then, hi, what it says in the Mishnah in Rabbi Meir, yesh bo mosar, yachzir l'shalafanov, is l'kula mi boile. It's almost as if the Mishnah is telling us that there's a limited liability here. No, there should be a total liability of Shimon. Shimon is the one who should pay both Levi and Yehuda. Not the way we saw Rabbi Meir has it, that we go through the shor and Yehuda takes what he can take, and if there's still left, then Levi takes what he can collect. Okay, so we'll Mitzvah Hashem pick this up.